KXEN, 1010 AM and 104.5 FM, Faith Talk for St. Louis, Israel Houghton and New Breed, and friend of God. Am I a friend of yours? You're a friend of mine, whether you like it or not. All righty then. Welcome to this day that the Lord has made. Let us all rejoice and set it off in a major way. All right, today is what? Wednesday. All righty then. And this is the 286th day of 2018, and there are 79 and three quarter. How about 79 and one-eighth day left in this year? How about that? And I got a guest this morning in the person of and the spirit of one Amy Narushkin. Now, I met Amy some time ago in attending those Monday night meetings with Dr. E. Lance McCarthy and the Global 1000, Ferguson 1000. They meet every Monday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Sarah and Forest Park Boulevard. You know, if you GPS it and all this other good stuff. They got 20 South Sarah. All right. Amy Narushkin, welcome to KXEN 1010 AM and 104.5 FM. How are you?
Good morning, Al. I'm staying out of trouble. Thank you for asking.
Well, that's as it should be. That is your divine right, and that is your divine heritage. And Amy, she has an interesting career. She does corporate workshops, and she does consult. She does consulting as well. She also teaches public speaking. And Amy, tell us about yourself. Just a little bit, not the whole book. Just give me a page or two.
Oh, my goodness. I teach cultural intelligence. So when organizations want to reach a broader market, they're going to have to hire people that don't look like them. And in order to retain people that don't look like them and have people in executive circles that don't look like the leader, they've got some work to do around cultural intelligence. So, for example, if an organization lacks, well, here are seven signs for lacking in cultural intelligence. You might have
seven.
Here.
Seven signs.
I actually have this on my website.
Okay. All right.
Low employee engagement, tardiness or high turnover in the organization, failure to attract and retain diverse talent, and inability to reach that broader market. You might have infighting between groups. Perhaps the Hispanics and the Bosnians don't get along on the factory floor. That's a lack of cultural intelligence. Lack of innovation or productivity, that can be a sign of lack of cultural intelligence.
Huh. Whew. Okay. you know, I was looking at your bio here, like I printed out some of the things that you sent me via the email, and I was reading over it, and you talk about disagreeing and all this other good stuff.
Yeah.
And how to disagree and when to disagree and how to neutralize the friction there, if there be any.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that.
I'm thinking about a CEO that said to me, I don't understand why that football player has to take a knee. Right?
Okay.
And so one of the ways to work through disagreement, because obviously I didn't agree with him, but it wasn't time to challenge him. First, it was time to acknowledge his feelings and where he was, affirm his experience. And then I would have the right to push on his perspective just a little bit. So what I said back to him when he said to me, I don't understand why that football player has to take a knee. And because of my white skin, a white person will say stuff like that to me. They'll get stuff up and out. And it's always pretty appalling to me, but I have an opportunity to clear things up. And so I got to say to him, I get it. You want that our flag respected. And that's an important flag all around the world. In fact, I'm married to a Frenchman. And the French to this day, 75 years after we helped them take back their country, they're still appreciative. And the American flag flies at the same level as the French flag. They appreciate what the Allies did. So I understand the importance of that flag. And that CEO said to me, yeah, you get it. And he just was quiet. And I said, so can I push on your remark just a little bit? And he said, well, sure, of course. And people will typically allow me to push on them once I've affirmed their experience. And I said to him, could it be that when that football player is not in his uniform, and he's riding his bike down the side of the road, that his life, because of the color of his skin, is in danger, and that the most productive place that he can object is by quietly on that football field taking a knee? Could it be that he wants people to know that his experience is not the same as everyone else's under that flag? And the CEO said to me, huh, I never thought of it that way before. And I got to say, it's not really an either or thing. It's a both and. We want our flag respected, and people don't experience. People have different experiences in the United States depending on their backgrounds.
All day. All day, every day. 84 hours a day, 9 days a week. Now, when the CEO initially made that comment,
mm-hmm.
how long did you wait before you responded? Was it like a day? You know, did you just simply dial it down a level, I mean, a notch or two and say, hey, you know, I'll come back a day later? Was it an hour later or what? How long did it take?
We were having coffee, and,
okay.
he asked me that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got people will pull me aside regularly and ask me questions about racial and cultural differences and gender differences on a regular basis because basically they know they're safe.
Okay.
Yeah, they All right. know they're safe.
What has been your most challenging situation since you've been doing this now?
Every time I teach, there's an opportunity for growth. Every time I teach.
Politically correct, okay.
Yeah, these one-on-one conversations for me are, each one presents a challenge. May I offer you another story?
Sure.
So recently, after a group of Christian leaders got together, mixed race group, I was the only female, so not a lot of gender diversity, but one of the gentlemen in the room hadn't said much during the whole conversation. And I brought up my whiteness, and so that brought into the conversation because typically in majority culture, we don't talk about race. And for me to bring it up allows people to kind of get over themselves and talk about the realities that are. But this particular pastor stayed quiet. And so then it was really interesting to me after the meeting as we're walking up. He saddled up right next to me, and he walked me out to my car. And he said, Amy, I got a question for you. And I said, what's the question? He goes, when people up there, and he was referring to North County, right?
Wow. Okay.
Because we're out in West County, right? When people up there talk about race, aren't they just making it worse? Isn't that interesting? And you wouldn't believe how many times I've heard that question.
Wow.
When people talk about race, aren't they just making it worse? And I said, huh, you know, what is it that, you know, what is it that's having you ask me that question? And he said, I'm just really worried that we're not going to be able to make for change. Right? And so I'm always on high alert when people make broad brushstroke statements about any group of people, women drivers.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
just,
yes. Oh, yes.
Just broad brushstroke statements tells me where they are developmentally. And so this gentleman is a pastor with a heart for making a difference and really is worried that when we're talking about race, we're making it worse. And I said to him, by any chance, do you have any kids? And he said, no, I don't have any kids. I said, married? And he said, yeah, I'm married. And I said, so question for you. When your wife has something to share with you, and it's something pretty emotional, pretty dramatic in her life, and you say, and she shares it with you, and you go, don't worry about it. Just get over it. How's that work for you? And he goes, not so well. And I said, well, if your wife shares something with you and is pretty emotional, and you go, oh, that must have been tough. I get it. How's that work? And he goes, oh, that works a lot better. And I said, well, one of the things you probably don't know is that America has never apologized as a country for participating in the African slave trade, whereas West African countries actually have. We've never actually acknowledged the mistake that we've made collectively. And one of the things that I know when I'm working with people that are different and people that identify as African American, since I identify as white, is I'll name my whiteness and we'll just get past it. And I said to him, it's really interesting to me that when I label the elephant in the room and I just name my race and all my ignorance that goes with being part of the majority culture, then we can get past race. So his intent to move on to problem solving, I explained, it'll be a lot more efficient if he actually acknowledges the impact race has on our lives, that our longevity and our health care and our bank accounts and our education level are directly impacted by race. And he said, I never really thought of it that way. And he said to me, but how do we make change? And I said, Pastor, how do you make change every day in your work? And he said, through relationships. And I said, bingo.
You know, you talk about this guy being a being a pastor. It's something that I never want to be.
Yeah, me neither.
I never. No.
Well, you see, lead in a different way.
Yeah, well, I do the best I can, but I still shoot myself in the foot, in the feet.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I do every day. I get it.
You know, like I'm thinking to myself that, you know, if this pastor was divinely inspired and divinely called and that type of thing, I'm thinking that he, you know, as much as many of them that I crossed in my lifetime, I'm thinking that they're in touch with the Creator more than most of us. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, not that I know, that he would not have made a statement like that, but like he made a statement and he spoke for a lot of people by saying that, don't you know they're making it worse by talking about race? I never looked at talking about race making the race problem worse. My thing was I'm just simply highlighting some things that took place. I'd simply highlight many times my own life experience. You know, growing up in Arkansas,
right?
Where I did,
yeah.
There are things that I saw, and then there are things that I still see, and there are things that I read about from time to time. You know, that I go wow, and I'm going man.
Wow, about what? Please, can you tell me what you're referring?
Okay, when I said what now?
Well, you just said things that you've seen. You've gone wow, like what?
Like more recently, you know, with the shootings and with the murders that took place in Pittsburgh, you know,
right?
The eleven people that lost their lives at the hand of this white guy. Then you had this white guy that shoot these two.
You're talking about in the synagogue.
Yeah, in the synagogue. Then you had this shooting that took place in Wisconsin Wisconsin but Kentucky.
Right.
And this guy, he shot another white guy. He shoots the these two black people in the back, the lady and a man.
God.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was something else that took place. Also with Dylann Roof as well. You know, now all these people, you know, that have done this, they live to talk about it. You know, the police, they took Dylann Roof to get a hamburger or something like that after he had killed nine people in the church in Charleston, South Carolina.
Right.
I know for a fact.
The irony, huh?
Yeah.
The white guy lives.
And on many occasions when it was a black individual, he didn't live. He didn't live. That's it.
Right.
You know, and it was caught on tape, too.
Right.
It is, you know. So
right.
I'm going.
Race has a big impact, huh?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. You know, and I wonder, is that the way that the majority of white people feel, that talking about race just makes it worse? Well, if it makes it worse, then how do we solve it? How do we get to a point where we all can say, oh, yeah, you know what? I saw that video of this black guy getting beat down and shot in the head by these policemen. I saw that without letting somebody tell us, look, I know you saw the video. That's not the way it happened. Let me tell you what happened, which is what happened with the riot in Los Angeles back in the 80s, I think, when it was caught on tape that Rodney King was getting the
beaten. Yeah,
you're getting the crap beat out of him on video.
Right.
And Daryl Gates comes out and says, oh, wait a minute. Hold it. Don't believe what you saw. Let me tell you what you saw.
Yeah, there's the white narrative.
Yeah, but from then to now, it's still taking place. How do we get to a place where we say, okay, you know what, you're right or you're wrong. Here's why I feel that way. But I find many times when there's a discussion of race, it becomes quite combative.
Right.
Like there are those that feel insulted, dismissed, discounted, disrespected, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. And they got to put the dukes up. And I'm going, oh, man. So we'll never get there, I don't think.
I would suggest we will get there. And you've actually asked me.
Oh, what great faith.
well, because I get to move the needle every day in my work.
Sure.
Right? And you actually asked me a couple of questions in there.
Sure.
And I think your first question was, do all whites feel this way? And
I know they don't. I know they don't, but there's a majority of them
that
do.
Well, yeah. Well, no, you're right. I stand corrected. Your
sure.
Your words were, do most whites or do majority of whites feel want to avoid talking about race? So
yeah.
I've got to actually have an answer for that question.
Sure, go ahead.
An answer, not the answer, an
go
answer.
Ahead. Yeah.
So in white culture, one of the characteristics of white culture is to avoid conflict, right? That comes from our Anglo roots, the stiff upper lip, right?
I've heard that many times.
Bury your emotions, bury your feelings, avoid conflict at all cost, right? At the expense of long-term peace, we will avoid conflict right now, right? So which is why in dominant culture – now, this isn't particular to any particular white person. These are characteristics of white culture. And when you avoid conflict, that means you're not going to talk about race, sex, religion, or politics.
True.
So talking about race, it's one of the taboo topics in the dominant culture, right? And then on top of that, besides the fact that we avoid conflict, we learn white history in school. So we only know white history. And on top of that, right, because we don't have to think about race every day, we don't have any language for talking about race. We don't have any vocabulary, right? And then finally, the average white person knows one black person. The average black person knows 8 white people.
Oh.
So right there, we're behind the eight ball.
Oh.
We don't have any vocabulary, any practice for talking about race. So when you come at me, at least that's the way I perceive it, right, as a white person, I'm not going to know what to do with that topic. So you're bringing up something I have no idea. And on top of that, which is really interesting, since children, we've been shamed into silence. Mm. So as a child, I remember when I would – you know how six-year-olds race to the door when the doorbell rings?
Sure.
I was a little girl. I must have been 5 or 6. The doorbell rang, and I raced to the door, and I opened it because you could back in the 70s, right? There was a black man standing there, and I knew him. He was a carpenter, and he was going to help my dad. And I said, "Dad," I called, "Mr. Black is here." Mm. And before I knew it, I was shuffled into the kitchen, door closed, sat on a chair, and said, "He's not Mr. Black. His name is Mr. White." And I said, "But that's not possible." And my dad said, "You sit there until you figure out what you did wrong." And he left the kitchen. I have no idea what I did wrong. I just kind of sat there. And it was really interesting because an African-American colleague of mine said, "I thought whites just didn't want to talk to me." And I'm like, "No, they don't know how to talk to you." And she's like, "Oh, my God, I had no idea where this silence on this topic came from." And I said, I want to apologize on behalf of people that look like me. But that's part of what compels me to stay in this work, is to give people the language and the skills for talking with people that are different. And it's not just across race. We're talking about socioeconomic level, gender, orientation, whatever you perceive to be different. The skill set, it's cultural intelligence.
And that's what you teach.
And this is what I teach.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing this work since 2014 when Ferguson imploded.
Okay.
It really shoved me into the work. I'm a career-long educator, and as long as I've lived in St. Louis, I've worked as an adjunct professor or on scholarship working on my PhD and training teachers. So teaching teachers how to run student-centered classrooms. And when Ferguson imploded, and I think we got back into the country. Like I said, I'm married to a Frenchman. We got back into the country just before, as school was starting. My kids started school. The rioting had been going on for about 8 days. And a friend of mine, I was just getting over my jet lag, called me and said, "Do you know what's going on in Ferguson?" I didn't. I live out in West County. Started bringing myself up to speed. And Saturday morning, now it's like 12 days after the rioting. It's been going on that long. I have four children, and the two younger ones, Chloe got up first. She was in middle school. And I said, "So how are you guys talking about what's going on in Ferguson in school?" School had been in session for about 3 days. And she said, "What are you talking about, Mom?"
They don't talk about it. They didn't talk about it.
They weren't talking about it. And we live out in West County, right? And so I started bringing her up to speed. My son, at that point in high school, gets up and he goes, "What are you guys doing?" I said, "We're talking about Ferguson. How are you guys talking about it?" He didn't know what I was talking about. So both middle school and high school. And I'm like, what's the deal? And I just was angry. You know, this is a teachable moment. And interestingly enough, my husband reads Le Monde newspaper every day to keep up his French on his tablet. And he walks by and he plops his tablet in my lap while I'm talking with the kids and bringing them up to speed. And right there on front page news in Paris.
They're talking about Ferguson.
They're talking about Ferguson. I've got family members, cousins of Cyril's, Facebooking me, asking me if we're safe in St. Louis. I'm like, Ferguson's four square blocks. I mean, but you'd think the whole city was up in flames with
sure.
It being international news. That silence was really, pun intended, deafening.
Man.
When I reached out to the school districts, I found, you know, I offered my service. This is what I've been doing, teaching and training teachers to facilitate tough conversations for years. How can I help? So in the United States, 80% of the teaching population, last time I checked the stats, are white, middle class, and female. And about 48% of our kids are kids of color.
I was in the public school
system.
I was in a public school system back in the 90s as a substitute teacher. And that was a regular sideshow.
Substitute teaching is hard work.
Oh, man.
That's harder
oh,
than
goodness.
Regular ed teaching.
Yeah, I was so intent on being – I mean, I was so focused on doing what I was doing, you know, because many of the kids thought I was, you know, they knew I was a sub, but yet they always told me that I was not a real teacher. And I was bent on trying to show them that I am too.
Yes, I am.
One day I got so upset, I suspended the whole classroom. And Miss Bland, if you're listening, sister, please thank you for saving the brother. I did that for 3 years, from 1993 to 1996. And one of my experiences, one of many of my experiences that I saw, it just seems like with the young males, the white teachers that I saw, the women, they always wanted to make sure that the young wanted to save the black boys, you know.
Yeah.
And I was the big time, the big bad wolf, the disciplinarian. So no, he can handle it. Let him come on in here. Let him do his homework. That's what I was saying all the doggone time because I knew what they were going to be faced with later on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I don't know whether any of the kids are listening now. I don't know where any of them are. I'm assuming that they're still here in St. Louis, mm-hmm. but I wish them all the best. When I left the school system, mm-hmm. I was kind of sad, but was able to figure out a way to keep teaching, I think I probably would have, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. I was just a mess in terms of I would hear the comment about, well, if I could just save one. And I was trying to save everybody because I saw everybody's child as my own child.
Amen.
Yeah, and I was in that, and I was going for it. I would leave
our children.
Oh, yeah. I had a ritual going every Friday. I would go by Walgreens and get a bottle of Stress Tabs. Yeah. And
wow.
the bottle said, take one a day.
Yeah.
I would take four in the morning, four in the evening.
Yeah. Wow.
Sure did.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Sure did, you know. But I kind of enjoyed it, but I understand the challenges
it's
many
tough.
Times, you know. You're dealing with kids, you know, that had serious discipline problems, you know.
Right.
Then you had some that got misdiagnosed
as
ADHD and all this other good stuff. And many
kids
times,
that don't know where they're going to sleep that night.
Yeah, exactly.
And what grown-up's going to be in their lives.
Yes.
It's devastating.
Oh, in case you just joined us, this is KXEN 1010 AM and 104.5 FM. We're talking to Dr. Amy Naruskin. She is say that again.
I teach cultural intelligence.
She teaches cultural intelligence. Now, in case somebody want to get in touch with you so you can enlighten them just a bit.
Yeah. Well, you can look at my website at www.empoweringpartners.com.
Empoweringpartners.com.
Yeah.
Their phone number?
There is all my contact information is on the website.
On the website.
Yeah.
The website, once again, is what?
Empoweringpartners.com.
Empoweringpartners.com.
Yeah.
Dr. Amy Naruskin. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
That last name is my husband's fault. It's actually Naruskin.
How you spell that?
Narishkin.
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 There we go.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, look, peace and blessings to you and your family and your career as well.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to have you back, I guess, within the next month or two. We can do this again.
Oh, it would be my honor, sir, to talk with you.
I also held on high to all my Global 1000 family, Dr. Elance McCarthy and Bishop Brother Dr. Ron Llewellyn, they're listening, I think, right? Okay, he said, yeah. Okay, good. Have a great one. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank
Blessings
you,
to you. This is KXEN 1010 AM and 104.5 FM, Faith Talk for St. Louis.